Welcome, everybody. Thanks for joining us here at the Linda for today's special Times Union WAMC Forum on Pedestrian Safety. Before we begin, I'd like to thank our good friend Mike Spain and our partners at the Times Union for bringing us all together here today. Crossing a street should not be a matter of life and death. Yet, here on Central Avenue, too often it is. According to the data collected by reporter Tim O'Brien, the chances are that sometime this week, at least one person crossing Central Avenue will be struck by a car. It's also likely that by the year's end, at least two pedestrians will die here. Today, we'll be digging deeper into the issue of pedestrian safety and hopefully come up with some solutions that will correct the situation. Joining us on the panel today are four individuals who have different perspectives on the issue. First, we have veteran Times Union reporter Tim O'Brien, who writes the weekly Getting There column that follows traffic and transportation issues in the Capital Region. He's the author of the April 7th report that set the foundation for today's discussion. Our next panelist is Jeff Olson, architect and planner for Alta Planning and Design, Saratoga Springs. Jeff is an expert on pedestrian walkways and bike path safety, and of course, the author of a book, The Third Mode Towards a Green Society. And I'm sure if you want to know more about it, you can just go online and find out about Jeff Olson's The Third Mode. Chief Stephen Hyder of the Town of Colony Police Department is our next panelist. Central Avenue stretches 7 miles from the Albany City line west to the Schenectady line. Rounding out our panel today is Robert Lemange, Director of the Safety Program Management Bureau for the New York State Department of Transportation. We've invited some members of the community, including some who live in our neighborhood along here in Central Avenue, to submit questions in writing. We'll get to them in a bit. But to begin, I'll ask Tim to set up the discussion. Tim, can you summarize some of the options to remedy this problem about the avenue of death?
There's a number of different ways to approach how to settle the issue of pedestrian safety on Central Avenue. I call them the three E's: education, enforcement, and engineering. There are ways to design the road to make it safer, there are ways to police the road to make it safer, and there are ways to educate people, both passengers and drivers, on how to behave in a way that helps everyone get where they want to go safely. We found that a lot of people, when they responded to the story, the reactions were either it's the pedestrian's fault because they wear dark clothing, they cross at night, and they cross where there are no crosswalks. On the other hand, the pedestrians responded, you know, we try to get across the street and these drivers are picking up speed. They think, oh, the next light's green, I'm going to pick up speed and get through it, and don't think there are people who live off Central Avenue who may be trying to cross.
Right here in front of, we cross over the Central Avenue in the wrong space all the time. That's sort of shame on us, isn't it?
Yes, people do cross at the wrong time. They cross at a crosswalk but without the light, or they run across in mid-street. Sometimes they do it feet away from a crosswalk.
Okay, so Tim O'Brien, that sort of sets it up. We have a very dangerous situation here. We are in real trouble. People are dying, and that's because people who cross the street aren't thinking before they cross the street. Let's go to Jeff Olson, architect and planner for Alta Planning and Design, Saratoga Springs. Jeff is an expert on pedestrian walkways and bike path safety.
What we're seeing in the professions right now is a trend toward complete streets. New York State now has a complete streets law. I know Albany is considering that here as well. And the idea that streets are for everyone who needs to use them at all times, and that includes pedestrians, bicyclists, motorists, transit customers, truck drivers, and everyone else. And the real challenge is how to balance all those competing needs. And as Tim said, you know, it's not just engineering, but it's also education, encouragement, enforcement, and evaluation. And really doing all those at the same time and doing them well in concert with each other is the key to creating a safe street.
That's it?
I could keep going, but I want to let these guys have a chance.
Keep going.
Well, when you look at some of the issues that we're seeing here, it's actually fairly common on high-speed, multi-lane suburban corridors. And it's really that transition between the downtown urban areas and the suburban spaces between them, where we do have people walking at night, walking under all kinds of different conditions, motorists who are driving not necessarily expecting them to be there, signals that are long distances apart from each other, so there aren't necessarily safe places to cross. And again, that gets back to looking at this from a design perspective, but also looking at it from a law enforcement perspective, from whether we're encouraging people to walk because it's healthy for them to do so, whether we're educating the public to obey the rules of the road. And here in New York State, it is the rule of law that pedestrians have the right of way when they're crossing the road. It also is the rule of law that we should be driving the speed limit. And I would urge people, whether they're on Central Avenue here in Albany or on Route 50 in Saratoga or any of the other suburban corridors, to be aware of that and to drive the speed limit, because it can make a big difference. Anyone, as Tim said in his article, driving more than 40 miles an hour, if you hit someone with your motor vehicle, chances are you're going to kill them. And in cases like that, there's more than one victim. It's not just the person who's been hit, but it's the person who's driving the car. You're going to live with that, you know, for the rest of your life. From a law enforcement perspective, I know we've had 8 fatalities here that are in Tim's article. It would be interesting to know how many of those drivers were cited with motor vehicle violations of any kind, how many of them have been either done time or suffered penalties as a result. There was a report years ago in the state legislature by then Senator Levy that called pedestrian fatalities New York State's hidden killer, because these incidents often go unnoticed until, in this case, we've got a reporter and a newspaper that's been following it. If you looked at the number of pedestrian-related crashes and fatalities and matched them up against the amount of money that gets spent on other forms of transportation, there's a disproportionate relationship between how we invest in issues like this versus other transportation investments that we might make. So there's, I think when it really gets down to it, and the reason I wrote the book, The Third Mode, is that there are these other modes of transportation and these other ways of thinking about these problems. We've got to first recognize that the problem's there and the seriousness of it, and then approach it with a very balanced, multifaceted set of tools to get to the solution.
Do the bicycle people get into trouble themselves? I mean, we know the pedestrians get hit. Do bicycles get hit also?
Well, you can see today, just coming here, the number of people out walking and bicycling. It's a beautiful day. A lot of them are riding on the sidewalk because they don't feel comfortable riding on the roadway. There are equal numbers, although there are not as many people bicycling as there are walking. Bicycling-related injuries and fatalities are a significant issue as well. So part of it is we've just got to realize these people are out there. They have a right to be out there, and their safety is just as important. And, you know, from a design perspective, I'll say that if we do well and design well from the ground up, and we start with the pedestrians and the bicyclists, it makes it safer for people driving motor vehicles as well. So that gets back to that idea of complete streets.
I wanted to ask you a question, if I might follow up on this, and anybody who knows the answer can tell me. I'm always surprised when I'm walking down Central Avenue on the sidewalk and some guy comes whizzing down on a bicycle about, you know, 50 miles an hour. I'm always surprised that it's allowed in Albany. I wondered whether or not this is a common occurrence, that other cities allow people to ride 50 miles an hour down a sidewalk. Yeah. Anybody know the answer to that?
In many of our downtowns regionally, riding on the sidewalk is not allowed. It's true in downtown Albany. It's true in downtown Saratoga. But the issue really is that those people who are still trying to just go from place to place haven't been given a safe place to do it. And so they're riding where they feel they have to, even though they know they may not be, you know, supposed to be doing it. And you've also got a lot of people who have been educated about what all those different rules are. So again, back to Tim's comment that there's an education role here, there's a law enforcement opportunity here. We also have to make sure that we're balancing that with good engineering as well.
Well, Chief Stephen Hyder, we have given you something to chew on here. What do you make of all this?
Well, let me say this first. More likely than not, we are very behind the eight ball on the whole Capital District when it comes to moving people, moving bicycles that aren't in vehicles, motorcycles. And we mustn't forget motorcycles, because we have a lot of motorcycles every year because of the fact that they aren't four-wheel, they don't weigh 2,000 pounds or 4,000 pounds. You know, when you look at the pedestrian safety and bicycle safety, there's a reason why bicyclists ride on sidewalks. It's because they don't have room to ride on the road. You know, where in other cities that I've been in, there's specific designated bike lanes. A lot of your new construction highways are designed with bike lanes. But, you know, in county today, would you ride in the driving lane of Central Avenue with 40-mile-an-hour traffic on a bicycle? Probably not. You'd probably go on a sidewalk, even though it may not be perfectly legal to do so. But one thing Jeff said, that we have a problem, and it's not just the town, it's throughout, but there's a misconception in terms of pedestrians today in safety. And by this, I mean this. The state law allows for them to have the right-of-way in a designated crosswalk and a designated intersection. It does not allow them to have the right-of-way if they're crossing between intersections. And even when they have the right-of-way at a crosswalk, we tell people, and we've actually put up signs in some of the hotels that were mentioned in Tim's article. We've had a program going on there for years where we actually put up signs telling people when to cross and how to cross. Now, mind you, folks, most of us in this room that are old enough to have children, we know that we teach our children to look both ways. We know we teach our children to make sure if a car is coming, you might want to wait before you just go stepping into the highway. Our average age of our fatality over the last 7 years has been 49 years old. And that is skewed by a fatality involving a two-month-old baby who was hit while in the arms of the mother. So our average age is actually in the mid-50s. So how do you start education a population that should have had that education 40 years before, or had the education and then failed to carry it through? We see people all the time just start into a crosswalk thinking cars are going to stop. That can be a fatal mistake. The other thing that we've seen in the town, because a major part of Tim's article was about what the accidents that occur within the town and about this one section of highway on Central Avenue. You know, we also have Wolf Road that has just as many people crossing the highway, and we don't have any accidents.
What do you make of that? Why is that?
Part of it is because if you look at our, and Jeff brought up the thing about have we issued tickets, in the total of 11 fatals over 8 years, I don't believe we have. And very simply put, part of the reason that in 9 of those cases, it was either pedestrian error in crossing, meaning they just walked out in front of traffic. And when you talk about a 40-mile-an-hour road, you don't want to do that. Or in 5 of the cases, either drugs or alcohol or both were on board to intoxicating levels. So how do you change that kind of behavior? Well, we have a hard time changing it in drivers, no less pedestrians. But in the 2 fatals that involved no pedestrian error, in both cases, sometimes accidents happen. And it not necessarily is going to get worn a traffic ticket. One was involving a case where a woman was holding a baby while holding the hand of a 3-year-old. The 3-year-old darted into the street. She darted in the street afterward, after the other child. All 3 people were hit, and the 2-month-old was killed. There was no error on the part of the driver other than the fact that people ran out in front. The other one was a very low-speed pedestrian accident in a parking lot of a shopping center that a woman appeared in a crosswalk as a person was just looking the other way. It was a 5-mile-an-hour impact, but because of the manner of how she fell, she received a head injury, and that obviously led to her death. But our main problem, and when we talk about enforcement, you know, we write about 10,000 traffic tickets in the town a year. Almost 2,000 of them occur on Central Avenue alone. So I defy people to tell me that, and when they come to the town on any given day, you will, between the 7 miles from the Albany City Line and the Schenectady City Line, you will probably see 4 or 5 police cars, many times 2 or 3 of them having people pulled over. So there is that deterrent effect. There is that attempt to slow people down. There is that attempt to make people obey. But the biggest problem we have, though, with the pedestrians is if you have people that just step up off the curb at a controlled or otherwise non-controlled intersection and walk into traffic, you have a recipe for disaster.
Well, you know, the reason that I wanted to do this panel is that it's far greater than Central Avenue. I live in a fairly rural bucolic town, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and there aren't lights, but there are crosswalks. And when you get into the crosswalk, you're supposed to look, you're supposed to wave, and then you're supposed to cross. Again, pedestrians have the right of way. And yet, I see screeches and near crashes, you know, all the time. And I wonder, and I almost never see anybody getting a ticket. But you're telling us you do watch that stuff and you do give tickets.
Surprisingly, you know, everybody prioritizes what they have to do. Do we send people out to watch for people crossing the highway during the day to make sure that they get across to the other side? No, we do not. And I don't think there's a police department on the East Coast that does, including the city of New York, that moves tens of millions of people a day across crosswalks with very little accident rate other than people who are violating those laws. Jaywalking, as it's known, if you look in the history books, jaywalking is only when you go against a light, meaning that when you have a signalized intersection and has a signalized pedestrian light that tells you not to walk and you continue to walk, that's jaywalking. Or when you walk across traffic at a non-controlled intersection, meaning in between two intersections, when you walk across and you don't yield to traffic. Obviously, that's where accidents are going to happen in that kind of circumstance. But to say that we're going to go out and start writing tickets to people who cross the highways, that's probably never going to happen.
Okay, let's go to next panelist, Robert Limoges, director of the Safety Program Management Program for the New York State Department of Transportation. Robert, what have you heard today that either you like or don't like?
Well, first of all, I want to thank WAMC and the Times Union for putting this panel discussion together, because I think that this is really important, and it's important for us all to work together to find solutions, not just the Department of Transportation, not just law enforcement, but we all need to work together to find a solution to the pedestrian safety concerns that we have. At DOT, you know, safety's our top priority. We have a data-driven program, and some of the data you know, that Tim revealed in his article is not uncommon. You know, the nature of pedestrian crashes are they frequently occur in urban areas where you have, you know, more pedestrian trips. They often happen at night when people are maybe wearing dark clothing or difficult to see by drivers. We see many of the injury and fatal crashes occurring mid-block, which is certainly a concern. Many, many pedestrian errors, as the chief was alluding to here, including we've seen patterns of, I don't know if it's a lack of knowledge or education or what it is, but, you know, we put equipment on the street, pedestrian push buttons and signals, and people don't seem to be using those tools. So that's something that I think we can work on collectively to help people understand what those things are and how they work. You know, pedestrian vehicle crashes are kind of unique because when you look at other types of motor vehicle crashes, you usually have one driver that's making a judgment or a decision that may result in an accident or a crash. When you have a pedestrian crash, now you have two people making decisions and judgments that could end up in tragedy. So we need everybody to be engaged and involved in helping this safety issue. You know, we can't emphasize enough the partnership element of how we should go about this and use the education, enforcement, and engineering collectively to complement each other's efforts. There's things that we do from an engineering standpoint that we feel are best practices to hopefully reduce the likelihood of a pedestrian crash, things like reducing the exposure for pedestrians. At least on Central Avenue, there are sidewalks, I believe, up and down the entire length of the corridor. You know, so we want to make sure that we're providing accommodation so people don't have to walk along the street or in the street to get to where they want to go. You know, we want to make sure that there's adequate sight distance and visibility for both drivers and pedestrians, you know, providing adequate crosswalk, crossing opportunities for people, and hopefully people make good choices and can wear clothing that's visible, especially at night.
Bob, I know there's other places in the country where they've tried a few new techniques or devices. There's a thing called a pedestrian hybrid beacon, similar to a traffic light. It flashes yellow first and then red. There's something called a rectangular flashing beacon that it's solar power. Many of them, it goes right on the pedestrian crossing sign. You push a button and it flashes almost like a police light, that it flashes back and forth. I think they're more visible at night than during the day, but those things can be installed relatively cheaply. There's some places that actually put flags on, although this is at crosswalks, that people can pick up a flag, walk across the street with it in their hand and put it down on the other side of the street so that people going back and forth will transport the flags. Has DOT looked at any of those as possible options?
By the way, I just want to interrupt and mention that was Tim O'Brien, the author of the Times Union article, asking the question. Now we'll go back. Sorry.
Sure. The department has reviewed there's different options. There's a rectangular rapid flashing beacon. There's also something called a hawk, which is actually it displays a red light for motor vehicle traffic. That's something that we definitely need to consider in this corridor. And what we want to do is take a look at the whole corridor. You know, traditionally we look at accident hotspots and try to make accommodations or improvements at specific sites. And I think as we go forward, we're trying to build on that normal process of safety reviews in our department and expand it so that we take a more corridor approach and can, consider the context in a systems type analysis to these concerns.
Chief, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I think you got to remember though, you can install all the signals you want, but if people won't walk to the signal to activate it, and in all 11 of our fatals over the last 7 years, none of them occurred in a crosswalk area. It was a little contrary to what Tim's article said over the weekend. The crosswalk in question in the area of Route 5, near the Price Chopper area, they were all walking towards that to get to the Price Chopper store. So it's not like they had to cross beforehand. They were walking in the same direction where they could walk to the crosswalk and very easily then use the crosswalk to gain access. So, you know, it's a twofold thing, though. We also have to start dwelling more on the drivers in terms of enforcement at the crosswalks to make sure And that is something we have done in the past and we can do, because even though we need to be careful of the pedestrian who walks out in traffic, we need to make sure vehicle drivers are actively looking for those pedestrians and bicyclists, because those accidents are avoidable accidents as long as they try to keep an eye on what they're trying to do.
And I know, Chief, there's 0.4 miles between the traffic signals there where the crosswalks are, and I don't know why people do this, but there's a crosswalk by the Price Chopper. Mm-hmm. For some odd reason, people who live in the motels cross in front of the motels where there's no crosswalk and walk down to the Price Chopper instead of walking down along the sidewalk to the crosswalk and crossing to the Price Chopper. I don't know what in human nature says I need to cross in front of my door instead of walking down the street, but people do that all the time.
And most of the accidents, that is exactly what happened. They came out of their establishment and just literally stepped off the curb in front to walk across the street.
Well, it'd be wonderful to know what the psychology of somebody who risks their life, you know, is. Is it the man and the bull, the matador and the bull, or is it the fact that they just don't think? Has anybody ever thought about that stuff?
Well, I talked to two people who I caught doing that very thing, and both of them are, you know, the old, it can't happen to me, I'm careful, I look carefully. So there's the assumption that I know what I'm doing, it's all the other people who cross Central Avenue who cause the problems, not me.
Then there's something else that we see around here on our corner of Quail and Central, and that are people who make right turns. And these right turns are death-defying for people who are crossing the street. Has anybody thought about the right turn problem, Chief?
If you look at New York City, you know, and I'm in New York quite often, you don't even dare make a right turn because all the pedestrians, that's where they're going to be, is crossing on your right side. I think if you look, and the engineers can talk better of this, our roads in this area were designed for speed and designed for moving the most amount of cars in the quickest amount possible. If people remember Central Avenue in the 60s and 70s, there were tunnels that went underneath there. The crosswalks weren't above the ground, they were underground. And they're actually still there. They're just filled with concrete at this point. But in front of all the schools along throughout the town of Colony, there was a tunnel that traversed all 4.5 lanes of Central Avenue. You know, but because what happened is when they wanted to take, they felt that they weren't being used enough to warrant. And it was the move then was to take the medians out of Central and to make it more conducive to left-hand turns and to move traffic quicker. Well, our times change, and now that we are more leaning to pedestrian or bicycle-free areas, unfortunately, you'd have to totally redesign everything to go back to some form that's probably a lot more safer for the pedestrian or the bicycle driver.
And Chief, a good example of that, maybe one that people can learn from as an example, has been New York City with Broadway. If you look at New York City's pedestrian and bike safety data over the years and use data, more people are riding and it's safer. There's definitely a power in numbers. If 20 years ago people started to say maybe Broadway doesn't need to go through all those triangular intersections and you could actually pedestrianize Broadway as a street, and now you can go sit and enjoy a cup of coffee or sit out at a cafe table at a whole series of public squares that were made out of a street. Now, I don't want to say that Broadway and Central Avenue are the same kind of street, but just that willingness to go that far in design to make it, you can walk across Broadway pretty much anywhere now, and you can do it while you're having a beverage. And it's become a safe place to be. It's become an enjoyable place to be. I think that expecting all pedestrians to change their behavior and behave safely is missing out on the fact that through design, we can make streets safer. And I'll use the, you know, my standard for design has always been, would you let, you know, your mother push your child in a stroller across that road? And I'm not satisfied with any project we work on until it passes that test. And, you know, think of my 80-plus-year-old mother pushing one of my kids in a stroller. You know, I want to make sure that street is that safe. And that's a pretty high level of design. Can it be accomplished as Broadway was in its first phase, was done just with primarily pavement markings? Its first phase was done largely with paint as an interim treatment. Could we improve signage and lighting, street trees? There's a whole range of elements of that complete street that may not be the most expensive solutions that are out there, but they all matter.
Now, Jeff Olson, what is the number one thing you would do if you were emperor and had to right now come up with a solution to this? We've got several people writing on white cards from the Albany audience here saying the obvious thing is to lower the speed limit. Is it?
We'd have to go through, there's a safety analysis process for that, but if you had me, you know, given a choice right now, I would go out and take all of the existing crossings and mark them with the highest visibility crosswalk marking design that we could do along the entire corridor. That change by itself would make it clear that there's an interest in protecting pedestrians. It would, as the chief said, it make it more visible to motorists that you're in a place that pedestrians are visible. Second to that, I'd go in and upgrade all the signs so they're reflective and visible at night. And if you did that over 4.5 miles as just a first step, at least it's something that you can do that you have control over. And there's a lot of those sort of sign and stripe type improvements. We could keep going, you know, in many, many levels of design and planning, that, and I'm glad to hear that the state is interested in doing that kind of holistic planning. But I thought you might ask that question today, and as I came down Central Avenue, I was thinking about that. A lot of the crosswalks have worn. They're not necessarily visible. We're having a problem at night. We have a problem with motorists not being aware that at 40 miles an hour, you're in an area for pedestrians. So that would be my number one if I had the choice to...
And yours, Robert Lamode?
Well, I can say that I agree with everything you said, Jeff, and I think that some of the past things we've done in the recent years, we've partnered with CDTA, who's a real key stakeholder here because of the bus rapid transit system that they put in, with the projects that have been done over the last few years to upgrade all the bus stops, improve the crosswalk markings with the, you may have seen the high visibility, the red crosswalks that are out on Central Avenue now. We've installed countdown timers, which I think are an incredibly simple but incredibly valuable tool to give pedestrians some feedback that, yes, my call's been registered and now I have 27 seconds to cross this street. It's good information for people to have when they're trying to decide whether it's safe to cross or not. Going forward, I think that, you know, we really need to look at the data and find out what works best in each individual circumstance along the corridor. The volumes on Central Avenue are vastly different in Albany, in the town of Colony, and in Schenectady. In Schenectady, it worked to use a road diet, and we used some of the techniques of complete streets and good pedestrian design in that situation, and I think it's worked pretty well. But the reason it's worked well is because the volumes are lower there. There's almost 45,000 cars a day using the portion of Central Avenue in the village of Colony. It's a lot of demand on that system. There's a lot of businesses. So we need to have a balanced approach. And certainly we don't want to create a situation that might make a new safety concern. So we want to be thoughtful as we propose new countermeasures. One of the things that our commissioners asked us to do is look at this in a corridor approach and really engage our local partners. And we're working towards doing that with local law enforcement, as well as the cities of Albany and Schenectady. So hopefully we'll get some good analysis out of that process.
Somebody in our audience wants to know what the role of public transportation in all of this is. Does it make a difference if we have buses or if we have cars? Chief?
The CDTA has done a wonderful job along the Central Avenue corridor, trying to get the people in as few places as they can so that you don't have so much walking around and in terms of running between the buses. Their Bus Plus program is a tremendous success.
Why don't you explain to everybody what it is?
Basically, Bus Plus, what that does is take you between Albany and Schenectady, I think with only 18 stops. Mm-hmm. So it's a very rapid transit, and I think it encourages people to take the bus versus, because the one problem we have is the 45,000 cars that travel that route every day. And if there's a way you can reduce the cars, you obviously are going to reduce the traffic, which by reducing the traffic, you have a better chance of controlling what traffic is there. But anybody who's been on Central Avenue during the course of the business day from, say, 8 in the morning till 8 at night knows how congested that road is. So a lot of your typical traffic calming techniques, narrowing or things like that, probably won't work because you have traffic backed up to Rensselaer County at any point of the day. But I think to move the pedestrians safely, the bus is a tremendous asset. But a lot of our people have been hurt are people that are traversing very short distances between home and business. And that, again, is the thing that's going to be education. As much as I talk about the education of the pedestrian to make sure that they cross when it's safe, I think we need an awful lot more public education programming aimed at the driver to remind them now that there are more and more pedestrians and bicyclists on the road to begin with.
I'm going to follow that up, Chief, with a question from our audience who want to know or say, across the state, 27% of fatalities on our roads are pedestrians and bicyclists, yet only 2% of our transportation dollars are spent on their safety. Would the New York State DOT consider adopting a fair share for safety policy? Robert, do you want to answer that one, being the expert?
Well, I think that's a great question. Pedestrian crashes are pretty complicated, and Because of the number of human factors involved, you know, we use in all of our designs, we consider pedestrian safety as well as all modal users. So what we really think is the best approach is not just looking at the DOT's budget, but collectively, how are all the public agencies as well as the communities, how are they getting involved in the solution? Because it has to be a comprehensive approach. You can't engineer your way out of a lot of these problems. It has to be also the education and enforcement initiatives that complement it.
Someone wants to know whether the new engineering modalities, the cameras, the speeders who get tickets in the mail, whether that's going to change anything. Who'd like to handle that one? In other words, you know, you drive 40 miles an hour in a 25-mile or 30-mile-an-hour zone or 50 miles an hour, you get a ticket in the mail. Chief?
There's been some talk in some communities about, like, the red light cameras. Mm-hmm. But I think there's been as much talk in many communities about removing those red light cameras because of the one, they haven't proved to be overly effective. The fines aren't really fines. They're assessments. There's no penalty against the driver. It's against the registered owner of the vehicle. And that and we actually looked into it for some areas of our town, but at the end of the day, it's a private vendor that manages it and a private vendor that makes a tremendous profit off of it. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to afford the technology that has to go into it. So we're not, law enforcement is not sold on that type of enforcement because at the end of the day, it's not true enforcement because the driver of the vehicle may not be the owner of the vehicle, and many times the tickets don't even get paid.
Tim O'Brien.
We've talked a lot about enforcement and about the engineering. To me, one of the interesting pieces is the education piece, especially, Chief, you mentioned the average age of a person getting struck is in the 50s. How do you educate people, both drivers and pedestrians, on what to do properly? How do you get that message out?
Well, I think public service announcements go a long way. I mean, I know the New York State Association of Chiefs of Police, they do podcasts that are available online to enforcement for training. There's no reason why public service announcements can't be made that go on TV, go on the different mediums through cable and whatever, or through the other forms of media. Unfortunately, you still have to get the people who are being struck to read the paper, to watch TV, to get that. You know, at some point, you know, we have a tendency of, instead of holding people responsible for their actions, we have a tendency to make some provision to make sure that their action doesn't affect them again. And a lot of what we're talking about with our accidents is simply that. You know, these are people that are well above the age of responsibility. And as you said before, Tim, how can you explain why somebody can't walk in the same direction they have to go, 200 feet east on the right side of the road, and then cross at the crosswalk? What makes them cross immediately and walk right in the middle of traffic? How do you educate them? I really don't know, because I'm not too sure that they haven't already been educated and just failed to take that under advice.
Does it make any sense to lower the speed limit to 25 miles an hour?
Well, let's put it this way. It's been proven. DOT does a lot of studies. We do a lot of traffic studies. There's a median speed that people go. That's basically about the speed that the road gets set at, because even if you took all the signs down, that's about the speed that they're going to go. On Central Avenue, the way it is, it's a wide-open highway. To think that people are actually going to go 25, they won't. There's not enough police cars in the Capital District to write all the tickets that you have to write, and they'd still be going just as fast part of the day afterward. You know, so.
What about the way in which lights are staggered? What about that?
Well, that's part of the bus rapid transit project, included coordination of all the signals along the corridor in Central Avenue. You'll notice at certain locations, Wolf Road being one of them, there's a special signal where the bus has a separate lane so that they can continue through and bypass some of the traffic. So a lot of that signal coordination is in place now, and it does help to meter traffic, if you will. If you go too fast, you're likely to hit a red light. But that is you know, something that is for a 15-mile corridor, difficult to maintain through the whole corridor. I was hoping if I could get back to the education piece for a moment. You know, some of the things that I think are really important, you know, given the use of handheld devices and everything these days, really, even though children may not be represented on Central Avenue, getting in front of children to help them understand how to cross the street safely is really important still. The department has a program. We have a traffic signal. It's a real traffic signal on a pole, and we bring that to schools, and we're able to show kids how it works, that the buttons actually do something when you press them and it'll change and you'll get a signal. In my opinion, you know, we need to take advantage of as many of those types of opportunities as we can. I know that the Metropolitan Planning Organization, the Transportation Planning Organization here in the Capital District, CDTC, has sponsored some education for law enforcement too, and I think Colony Police Department was able to participate in that last fall for helping police officers and law enforcement understand exactly what's in the VNT law for both drivers and pedestrians for encountering any of those situations that, you know, where there's some question about who has the right of way, to hopefully clarify that. So, you know, we're definitely open to participating in that education effort and moving that ball forward.
If I could add to that, there, you know, there are a lot of really good programs that are going on here in our region, and maybe if they could be applied in this corridor as part of the efforts that's being talked about. Capital Coexist, which is an outreach safety campaign that the Capital District Transportation Committee has hosted, a project that I worked on a number of years ago with the New York Bicycling Coalition and AAA, was a statewide effort to re-educate drivers who've had points on their license to share the road with bicyclists and pedestrians, so taking drivers who've had those incidents happen and retraining them. Certainly the Governor's Traffic Safety Committee and other organizations that are here, the coalition that led the Complete Streets passage in New York State, included groups, Tri-State Transportation Coalition and Transportation Campaign, AARP, and others. So, you know, there's a wide range of people who have supported these kinds of projects. And we've certainly have seen, you know, the municipalities working on these elements. We've been involved in several projects locally with the City of Albany, including some redesign work with Madison Avenue and some other studies that are going on now. So I think the issues and the awareness is increasing. And the question becomes how to apply that in concert along a corridor like this. It certainly will take some resources and some effort to make that possible. And I guess I just wanted to bring that back to, you know, it's a very basic thing. We're talking about traffic. And if you look at New York State's vehicle and traffic law and look at the definition of traffic, the first word is the word pedestrians. And we need to rethink the way we define traffic and ensure that pedestrians and bicyclists are part of it.
Here's a question from the audience. How about equipping CDTA buses with stop signs like school buses to allow riders time to cross Central Avenue in stretches in Colony without crosswalks?
It's an interesting concept. However, right now the state law wouldn't provide for it. School buses are a special vehicle that are specifically talked about within the New York State Vehicle Traffic Law with specific laws about it. You know, unfortunately, it's a trade-off, and the police department, we are neutral involving this trade-off. We are there to enforce the laws to make sure traffic keeps moving as best as we can, but we do it given the tools that are afforded to us. So right now, Central Avenue in town is four lanes plus a median. It's designed much more for as a 40 to 50 mile an hour road. Would never have, without having a whole lot of design for pedestrian in thought of when it was during its last redesign. You know, if you reduce the speed, that may have some effect, but probably with the design of the road, people are still going to drive fast. But the other thing you got to keep in mind is we're still trying to move those 45,000 vehicles. So the communities have to be willing to give that up and to either push traffic to Shaker Road, to Sand Creek Road, to Washington Avenue Extension, which just really starts pushing the problem further and further from the source and not necessarily solves the problem at hand. And that's the one challenge in traffic safety and traffic management, is not pushing the problem from one area to the other, but truly solving the problem that you're dealing with at the time. And the CDTA bus thing, while that's a novel idea, because unfortunately there's a lot of people on CDTA that have to cross the road after they exit the bus. But if you can imagine how many bus stops there are on Central Avenue and what that would cause all day with them stopping traffic all day, you would never want to traverse Central Avenue, and we'd be having this meeting about Sand Creek Road and Shaker Road in a moment's notice.
There's another variation of that, and our company works on projects like this throughout the U.S. and around the world, and places like Pittsburgh and Dubai and Chicago. And one that just came to mind is Des Moines, Iowa, wraps all of their public buses with a share the road message, and they, in the same way that buses are used for advertising, have made that part of their public safety campaign message. So you've got sort of a rolling communication, and it's about the customers who are using the buses, whether it's pedestrians crossing to the bus stops, or as I just saw outside earlier, someone putting a bike on one of the bikeable buses here. So we could begin to combine some of those things in some very effective ways.
Well, Jeff, now that you've gone and mentioned it, how do they do it in Dubai?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that project, because they had a problem much bigger than what we have here in Central Avenue. And I've also worked at one point worked on the Las Vegas Strip and some other really challenging roads out there. Dubai had a significant number of pedestrian fatalities, as did its sister city in Abu Dhabi, the Emirates. And they did both a bicycle and pedestrian master plan, and they did them as they do so many things. They did them big, and they did them at very high speed. We looked at every safety incident location throughout the entire Emirates, developed a action plan and countermeasures based on all those treatments, and all the things we're talking about here, from red light cameras to medians to pedestrian refuge islands, landscaping, narrowing streets, slowing speed limits, and they just started doing them at a very large scale. They realized they had a significant problem. And in their case, there are some very difficult societal issues, particularly that the motorists and the pedestrians are often of different classes. Many of the workers that are there who are building and maintaining those buildings have to cross roads to get to the settlement places that they are residing in. And we're making up a large number of the fatalities, both pedestrians and cyclists. They're in the process of building dozens of new pedestrian bridges. They're redesigning their roads. They adopted complete streets in a single day, in a single meeting, and made that their standard practice.
It's easy in Dubai and some of those other countries where you don't have a common council. You have somebody
a little different form of government. Yeah. I agree, but also that here's a place that also has, very oil-rich, very car-dependent. And at the same time, when you look at the health statistics, the Emirati men were ranked by the World Health Organization as the most diabetic people on the planet. So there's a,
They eat a lot, so what does that prove?
Well, it's that they were once a very healthy, outdoors, active living population. And I want to bring this back to that because, we're talking about a safety issue on one hand, but people do need to be healthy and to walk and to ride our bikes more. And at every trip we do, walking and bicycling reduces our carbon footprint. It improves community health and improves our mobility as well. So I think thinking about that throughout the communities makes us think about Central Avenue differently. A place that is safe and connects people to where they need to go.
As you speak about Central Avenue, here's a question. On Central Avenue in Albany, there are a few crosswalks between Henry Johnson and Quail Street that are mid-block with signals. In other words, they're not crossroads. They're just mid-block, and they just allow for more signals. This feels much safer to cross them than crossing at intersections with turning cars. Why aren't there more of these? Tim, when you wrote your very good article, did you ask that question?
I did, and that's when I got into looking at the different devices that are now created and allowable on our roads, like the pedestrian hybrid beacon that flashes, or the one that's solar powered and goes on the signs. That there are now ways that you can do those things mid-block. They're much less inexpensive to install than a full traffic signal. And the person is right. If there's people turning, they will often do it without looking for pedestrians. I work at the Times Union building, which is at the corner of Wolf and Albany Shaker Road. And if you want to get to Starbucks, you're taking your life in your hands. Because people just don't understand that you're allowed to be there. They look at you like, what are you, crazy? I always make sure that I make literally eye contact with the driver before I step in front of them. So
take your car.
I'm sorry, I missed that one.
There are some things you can do at traffic signals to make it a little bit safer for pedestrians that choose to cross at the crosswalk at a signal. And there's some timing plans that we can use to give pedestrians a bit of a head start. So the lights remain red on all legs of an intersection for a period of 3 to 5 seconds and allow pedestrians to step off the curb and become visible to drivers that may be turning. So there are some simple things that we can do with the existing equipment that we have in the field at traffic signals to improve situations like turning conflicts.
And Rob, didn't DOT put a mid-block signal on, I think it's on Route 7 within the last few years?
On Route 7? I'm not aware of that, I guess. Tim?
Okay. And there is a new one being installed in Saratoga this year as part of the city's Greenbelt trail system. So it does happen, but I think the comment that Rob made earlier is that this is a long road between multiple communities, and it's different places along its length. And there isn't necessarily, as I said in your article, Tim, it's not a one-size-fits-all solution for all of it. And I think it gets to a level of thinking and design and community involvement throughout its entire length, that there are some solutions are going to work in some places and maybe not all. But I think the one thing it has to come across is this sense that this needs to be a complete street, that it is an important regional asset for the pedestrians, the bicyclists, the motorists, for everyone who needs to use it, the transit customers. I think just really something we need to recognize, that those kinds of projects are defining for our quality of life as a region. And the other places that we work in, very much like the Capital Region, are looking to attract jobs and keep people working here. And we certainly don't want our headlines, you know, saying that we are having, you know, these kinds of incidences at all. And we should do everything we can to try and change it.
So let me ask you all a question. Is there any difference, specific difference, about the way in which Central Avenue exists as a corridor and the rest of the roads in the WAMC listening area?
There is, actually. I did some reporting that didn't quite make the story, but Central Avenue actually has twice the accident rate that's expected for that kind of road. And we compared it to a few other roads. Route 7 from Latham Circle to Schenectady City Line has 0.01 accidents per million vehicle miles. Central Avenue, it's 0.15, so it's 15 times as much. So Route 9 has, the ratio is 0.05 accidents per million vehicle miles. Central Avenue is three times that.
And what accounts for that? Is there a demographic issue?
I think it's the nature of the development along the road. I mean, those other places do have, you know, your fast food restaurants and your things that make people cross the street. But you have a combination here of bus stops that people are crossing to get to, fast food places, motels where people live. And so there's a lot of people looking to cross the street at the same time as it's a major thoroughfare.
Anybody else want to check in on that?
Yeah, I mean, the Central Avenue corridor really is a multi-purpose corridor. It's a community. It's a residential corridor. It's a commuter corridor. It's a business district in various parts of the length of it. And I think, you know, because it's trying to meet all those different competing needs in some cases, that this problem has manifested itself here more than in maybe some of the other corridors of the Capital Region.
I would just add to that, though, if you look at some of the roads that nationally have made similar kinds of headlines, whether it's been Queens Boulevard in New York or Las Vegas Boulevard I mentioned earlier, it is the suburban high-speed corridors with mixed development, generally suburban types, that are sort of these in-between zones between being truly urban and being truly rural. So there are a lot of lessons that can be learned and applied. We've also got, from a motorist perspective, we have a culture that has reached a point where we're texting while we're driving and we're taking phone calls, and soon we'll probably have Wi-Fi in all our cars. And, you know, there's a distractedness to our attention span. And whether that's true of pedestrians as well, motorists and others, we need to think from a design perspective that that's who's out there now. And it's really going to take a sort of full court press looking at all the ease, looking at all the tools that are out there to try to solve these. They're not simple problems to solve. They're not things that can't be solved. You know, it's definitely doable, but it takes a significant effort to make it possible. And I just wanted to add that there are places in the world right now that have said they'll have zero tolerance for any traffic fatalities. The entire nation of Sweden has set a goal of reducing traffic fatalities to zero.
How do they do it?
A major national effort at every possible level, every E well-funded. They have a huge effort that, you know, you look at, you know, in the worst case scenarios in our country, when there's a transit incident or an airplane incident, there's a safety board that investigates every single one of those cases immediately. It starts the same day. These pedestrian crashes, some of them have waited quite some time for Tim to do his article. They date back to, you know, 2009. It's taken us a while to recognize this problem's out there in our society, and everyone listening to this program and is here today, I urge you when you're driving to go out there today and pay attention to the pedestrians and the cyclists who are out there. We need to recognize that at a state level, at a national level, and at a community level.
Now, you hinted at something that we do know about the Scandinavian countries, and that is alcoholism and driving, which is not tolerated. I wondered if, Chief, maybe you could go first. Do we have such a problem here? In other words, do we find people driving drunk and killing people?
Let's put this way. Throughout the last 30 years of the concerted efforts in the drunk driving field, in the town of Colony back in the 70s, we would arrest about 1,200 people a year for drunk driving. Today, we're lucky if we can scratch out 250 or 300. So obviously, and that is totally, as Jeff has been alluding to, and Rob has too, a direct result of tremendous education, tremendous public awareness, tremendous amount of law enforcement, and tremendous amount of putting people in jail. Now, it was a decision the country made, the state made, back in the 70s, that this was going to be an initiative. Back in the 70s, we averaged 20 to 25 fatal accidents a year, almost all by alcohol-related crashes. I think it was 2010, we had 10 accidents, they were all motorcycles, and no alcohol involved. So we've made tremendous inroads in the whole area. But however, having said that, you still, even on an announced weekend of DWI arrests in Albany County, will arrest between 20 and 50 people who didn't bother listening to read the paper, watch the news, listen to the radio, because they still went out and drove drunk. So it's still a problem. My guess is it always will be a problem, as substance abuse will always be a problem.
Chief, do the police look for those institutions which provide alcohol or sell it, assume that when somebody comes out of one of those places, they may have had a few?
Do we sit there and watch for people to
yes.
do that? No. It's a practice that has never been accepted throughout New York State. You see that sometimes in the movies and things like that. Mm. There's no question about it. Have my people run through the parking lot and see some guy come stumbling out, they'd be more apt to stop the guy before he got in his car rather than letting him get in his car just to make the arrest. Mm. But having said that, you know, we've got hundreds of bars throughout the Capital District. There's tens of thousands of people who drink every day, and not saying that they should be, but they still manage to get on the road and drive safely because they have one, maybe they have two. They don't have the 5, 6, or 7 in happy hour. So it is still legal to drink and drive. It's just not legal to drink and drive to excess. We urge people not to drink at all when they're driving because it lowers all those skills that you need to make those quick decisions when you're driving a vehicle. As Jeff talked about the driver inattention, it's becoming a huge problem. And even as some of the larger consumer reports type magazines have criticized that our vehicles are so technical today that you cannot drive without taking your hands or taking your eyes off the road. Even without the cell phones, just to change the radio is a multifunction task that's caused a lot of problems.
It certainly is. Tim, you look like you wanted to ask a question.
Well, we've talked a bit about the motels on Central Avenue.
We only have 3 minutes, so make it a fast question.
All right, a fast question. Do you think there are immediate things that can be done in that particular stretch where most of the fatalities have occurred? You or Rob?
Well, you know, I think what I said before is critical. We need to work together, and we're actively engaging with our state and local partners to look at this corridor. And I'm certain that there are things that can be done that touch on all of the E's that we've been talking about. So I'm confident that we can make a difference here.
So let me supplement your question. Obviously, the elephant on the table, the invisible elephant, is always money. You know, if we had more money, could we do better?
Well, money always helps. I can't say that that's not the case. But, you know, I think there is adequate funding available to do many of the things that we could do right away, short-term improvements that will make an immediate impact. So I think we can expect to see something like that.
Chief?
Alan, money would not stop my 9 out of 11 fatal accidents from occurring because in those cases, the pedestrian literally walked out in the middle of the road and got struck by a car. And short of providing them transportation from their residence, from their hotel, from their business, and making them take a ride in a car to get across the street, they were still going to cross that street at that point in that time, and all the money in the world wasn't going to save that.
I'll just add one bit to that, is that we could possibly look at the median spaces out there and provide some refuge space so that if someone does make that decision to cross, at least they don't have to cross all the way to the other side. We might be able to improve lighting. There are probably some design things that could help as well. But I think that the money question gets back to a prioritization question, and that, as I said earlier, recognizing that this issue is happening throughout the state, throughout our region, it's not just on this road, it's on lots of roads, and that if we really push forward with complete streets, these are problems that we can solve.
You've been listening to a forum sponsored by the Times Union and WAMC. We're delighted you've all come. We want to thank veteran Times Union reporter Tim O'Brien, who writes the weekly Getting There column that follows traffic and transportation issues in the Capital Region. He is the author of the April 7th report, which is online at timesunion.com, and set the foundation for today's discussion. Our next panelist was Jeff Olson, architect and planner for Alta Planning and Design, Saratoga Springs, and Chief Stephen Hyder of the Town of Colony Police Department. Central Avenue stretches a long way, and the chief's guys are there for much of it. And also Robert Lemonge, director of the Safety Program Management Bureau for the New York State Department of Transportation. Thank you all for coming. And audience, thank you for being here. We really appreciate it.
You've been listening to Dr. Alan Chartok, President and CEO of WAMC Northeast Public Radio and Professor Emeritus at the University at Albany. For more information on the In Conversation with Alan series, or to order additional copies of this or any interview in the series, call 1-800-323-9262 or visit us on the web at wamc.org.